Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, please sit back because you are now about to go behind the blue curtain. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. January 6th, it's 2018. This is the first show behind the blue curtain for the new year. I'm your host, Stan Mason. This is our show. Once again, said it all last year. I'm going to say it this year. This is our show. This is a place where the people with the least of a voice can have the loudest voice. You know, the people who just don't have the platform but have the ideas. You can come here and be heard. You don't have to be politically correct here. You don't have to be able to speak the King's English. You don't need a high school degree. You don't need a PhD on the wall. When you come in here, some people's life experience is better than some people's learned knowledge. So when we come in here, we all share. This is a encompassing show. It's not a black show, a white show, a blue show. In here, everybody's going to get put on the fire sometime, and everybody's going to be put on the pedestal at the same time. You know, we're going to be relevant. I just ask that everybody respect each other, you know, keep the profanity to a minimum. I don't do the N-word, you know, so let's keep that one out. You know, the B-word, the C-word, y'all know what they are if you don't ask an adult. And what I wanted to do is I was thinking about last night at work, and I said, you know, what would be a good topic for today? Usually I come up with a midweek, and this midweek I kind of didn't get one because I've been doing so much running around. And I thought about it. I said, well, what did we – as a country, really accomplished in police reform last year? And I really couldn't put my finger on anything other than a lot of pompous speeches by folks who were in positions to affect change. You know, I watch Good Morning, Jimmy, and I'm on the Facebook Live at the same time, you guys. So if y'all hear me saying good morning and reading, because I like to keep my Facebook people included in the show, because this is all one big thing. We're just worried about reaching masses here. And you know, thought about it, I said, you know, we've had a lot of posturing from politicians. We've had a lot of sound bites. We've had a lot of news conferences, you know, while the town is smoldering in the background. We've heard promises of police, community policing. That seems to be the cliche, the catch term. But that's, I swear by it because that's what I was trained by. You know, we've seen chiefs stand up after the Department of Justice has come down on them and talk about affecting real change and reaching out to communities and getting involved in communities. Now, that hasn't transpired into community policing in many of these places. Hello, Baltimore, like we heard it was going to be. Hello, Chicago. Hello, Cleveland. Don't blame the citizens for that. That's the people who are in positions to actually make these changes happen. So, you know, it's like James Baldwin said, I can't believe what you say because I see what you do. So that's why we do what we do here. We keep the fire on. And, you know, believe it or not, some of the big wigs, they're looking because I don't have any commercials here. I don't have any sponsors. So you guys don't have to worry about hurting anybody's feelings. You're not going to cost me money. This costs me the same amount of money every month. So when you call up and you got that passion and you're living through some things and seeing some things and been through some things, feel free to let it out how you feel it. Don't dress it up. Don't dress it up. Keep it clean as best you can, but keep it real. I don't care whether you agree with what I'm saying or whether you don't. Let your passion out. I'm not going to take it personal. Nobody here is going to take it personal because if you're here right now on a Saturday morning, from wherever, and I appreciate you guys being here, whether you're on Facebook Live or whether you're listening to the show, you know, you obviously see there's a problem. We just may differ in our approaches to the problem. So in thinking, what do we do? What is our game plan right now, 2018? What do we want to do? How do we want to approach the mess that we've seen in 2017? You know, I mean, just 100% chaos. You got neo-Nazis coming out like roaches in a project apartment that you just moved into. I mean, just feeling free. We got racial hatred. We got division. Police reform doesn't seem to be making the leaps and bounds that it should be making. So we're going to turn up the heat. And we do that not through turning up the voices necessarily, not through getting physical, not through getting rowdy, but getting educated. See, when you can meet them on their field at their level, that's how we're going to do this. Now, here's the suggestion before I get into a script that I think, and I want you guys to throw me on Facebook Live. Throw me out what you think a good approach is, your ideas, what you'd like to see in the new year. And like I said on the earlier Facebook Live thing, when I tell y'all this is our show, I mean that. If you've got a topic, there's something in your town, there's some event, there's something that's going on, there's something you want to see done, all you got to do, good morning, Monica, all you got to do is just send me a Facebook message. Hey, Stan, what about this topic? I feel strongly about this. And if you feel that strongly, you do the research, we'll hook up, and you're going to do that segment of the show. That's you. You call in, bam, you're up. You're the host. You do what you do. Now, I'll do a little bit of research back and support you because that's how we get everybody's voice out there. That's how we get the major people, the players, to be, man, I don't want them bringing this show up here where we at and putting us on the hot seat. See, that's how we're going to do it. And I don't care if you still got a chemical dependency problem. That's a fancy way of saying drug habit. I don't care if you're a felon. I don't care if you're unable to vote. I don't care if you're poor and third generation living in the projects. I don't care if you live in a gated community with big lion statues out on your front porch. Here, if you believe in it, then we believe in it. Let's put it out there because you never know how many people are out there thinking the same thing that you're thinking. You know, Gregory says, I'm an investigator. I deal with all types of issues every day. I support all races, and I support freedom and rights. Absolutely. Absolutely. But somewhere in it, freedom and rights are good, but I think that when we say freedoms and rights, they become cliche because we're losing rights. We're losing rights left and right. And the voice of the people, the small, what they call us small people, and I'm included in that. If you're middle class, you're small people, so get used to it. And, you know, our voices are muffled. You've got a group that just makes their own decisions. And it's not a white group. It's a black, white, it's political influence. I think the mess on the street is real trickle down from the greed, actions, interactions at the top of the government. Joanne Neal. Joanne, I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more. But you know what? The trickle down that comes down from the government is because we don't trickle our votes up. See, some of us are sitting at home and say, well, I'm not voting. It doesn't make a difference. Well, you know what? You're punishing all of us. And they depend on folks not voting. You know, and that's the thing that gets me. You know, we'll stand in line for Target. We'll stand in line for Black Friday. We'll stand in line for the movies. We'll stand in line for a concert. We'll stand in line at the courthouse. Not to get married, but to appear before the judge. Stand in line in jail. We stand in line in school, but we won't stand in the voting line. And then we wonder why we, and when I say we, I mean white folks too, because if you white and middle class, you poor as I am. And if you poor and white, you as poor as the poor black was. So that's the thing we got to move, kind of transition into. It's an us thing. We have to carry that over. Are there some privileges and different things that go on? Absolutely. We all know that's there. But at the forefront, we have to amass the army. We have to bring everybody under one tent first. We can fight the little stuff later. But I can guarantee you, when you get into this line of police reform, some of these white folks that we think got all these privileges, you sit down and talk to them, you're going to find out that they don't have some of the privileges that we think they have. They've been pulled over. They've been profiled because they have long hair, because they have tattoos. So that's what I want to do this year, really focus on getting that solid base of all of us together, like-minded. We're going to have our differences within the group. Everybody doesn't get to get along. But what I was thinking, and you guys tell me what you think now, I was going over thinking about Charlottesville and those clowns that were out there with tiki torches playing Klansmen without the hood, being all bold. And I remember distinctly when some of them got called out and recognized, they went home and didn't have jobs. I thought that was cool because somebody recognized them. They had the neighbors, well, Bob, I didn't know you were a Klansman. You know, so I was thinking when you have these hate groups that come and protest, instead of going and meeting their voice with a loud voice and a bunch of signs, go out there civilized with some Nikons, N-I-K-O-N, with some cannons. I ain't talking about the fire charges. I'm talking about the camera. And get up there and zoom in. Have your photographer strategically placed and zoom in. And you take clear headshots of every single one of them. And then post them up on social media and say, does anybody know so-and-so who attended this event on this day? And let that go viral. Somebody's going to recognize you. And we're going to see how clannish you get when somebody calls you out of the closet and says, wasn't that you down there at that Klan meeting? We're going to find that some of these folks are on city councils, fire departments, police departments. Some of them are preaching. Some of them are your counselor at school. Some of them are teachers. Some of them are lawyers. So then we don't have to fight with the police. We don't have to get sprayed. We don't cause any hassle. We're sitting off. Just take them headshots and just post them up on Facebook and ask, can anybody identify them? Share this, share that. And watch how fast they start covering their faces back up, you know, and then you pick up and you deal with it from there. That's just something that a thought that I had, you know, a way to peacefully deal with some of these people and inflict maximum intimidation, you know. So we'll you know, give that a shout and put that feather in your cap for the next time you guys that do the protest thing, you know. Good morning, Cynthia, you know. Take that out there with you. Now, what I wanted to do this morning is go back and revisit something. Good morning, Joanne. It's, you know, police reform. You know, it's what we're fighting for. The change has got to come. If you got an iPhone, your iPhone has already, what's going on, Bert? Your iPhone is already updated. It'll tell you when it's time to update. So, hello, police departments across America, it's time for an update. It's 2018. It's time for an update. And what I want you guys to do now, I hope some of y'all are taking some notes on this. There's four types of policing. You've got call-driven policing, and that's just where we just go out there and we work the calls on the screen. We're not going out there and doing anything different. We're not going out there and actively looking for speeders. We're going out and work those calls on the screen. That's your bigger departments. Your Los Angeles, your NYPD, Miami, Houston, Dallas. I mean, these guys come out and these ladies, and when they hit the streets, the computer's full of calls. So that's what they're doing. That's called call driven. And that's, you know, when you have a heavy call load, that is an appropriate style of policing to address that issue. Okay? Then you have proactive policing. And proactive is where the guys are answering their calls as they come, but when they're not answering calls, they're out there looking for your traffic stops, actively patrolling for burglars. They're actively, you know, identifying your drug dealers, your gang members. They're making maximum amount of time with their call load. Then you have reactive policing. Now, reactive policing is just officers are coming out. They're in between that high call load and having time to be proactive. So they're just reacting to what's happening around them. I'm not on the call. Oh, man, this guy ran a red light. Let me go get him. They get done with that, and they're going to another call. Oh, wait a minute. There's a lady over here that needs help crossing the street, whatever. But they're reacting to what happens around them. They really don't have a preset plan. They're reacting. Then you have, my favorite, community policing, which is proactive. Community policing is a partnership between citizens and police that provides for a shared responsibility in solving community-related problems. Now, we're going to get into that because I want you all to write this stuff down, go back, play it later, take these notes, and go meet with your chiefs. And when you get with them, just say, hey, chief, you know, and they're not going to expect you to know this, that there's four styles of policing. What style have you, as the chief, what style have you passed down and mandated that our, don't say your department, because it ain't the chief's department, it's your department. You the taxpayers, it's your department. Stop saying to the chief, your department. You say my department, our department, because that's what it is. Take some ownership in it. That's the first step in effecting change. Stop letting the chief run the department. Take ownership in it. You know, what style of policing is our department doing? Cynthia says, partnerships are always where the both sides got skin in. Absolutely. And that's the beauty of community policing, Cynthia, because when you go in there and you say that to him, say, are we doing problem solving? Are we doing reactive policing? Are we doing community policing, call driven? Chief, what style have you passed down to all the officers, not just the street officers? Now, here's the kicker, y'all. Don't let them tell you, well, we got a crime prevention section. That's not community policing. That's McGruff the crime dog, making sure you got smoke detectors and giving your kids stickers and little badges. That is not community policing. Don't let them sell you on that. And if they get sideways, where did you take this show in there and play it for them? That is not community policing. If you've got a 500-man department and they say, well, we've got 20 community police officers. If you got 20 community police officers in a 500-man department, that's not community policing. Community policing is encompassing. It is the street officers, the drug enforcement section, the civilian employees, all the way down to the janitors. Customer service-oriented thing. And it doesn't just go with the police department. The city has to be sold in on it, all the way in. And when that officer goes into his geographic area and interacts with these citizens and they have that officer's phone number and they start working through these problems, that officer gets any city resource he needs within reason. And he meets, and it's like we talked about earlier, and you set up your top five crimes for the year. Now, some of the steps that you want to do, and I'll type this up later and I'll put it on my page for those of you that want to get it and take it to your chief. You know, in community policing, you got citizen involvement, prisons and courts, and results. Okay. Now, the first thing you got to do is neighborhood empowerment. So how do you get neighborhood empowerment? How do you come out as a community police officer? When I came out in my city, we had neighborhood associations, and that made it easy because I didn't have to run to every little single Tom, Dick, and Harry, or Jane, and Jill that had a problem. I went to the neighborhood association. They were recognized by the city, and that was a good starting point to be able to focus and have your meeting. So you have to organize those. Once you get that in place, that neighborhood officer is sewn in. He's there. He's bringing all resources to bear. You know, it's rocky at first because, you know, you got to have some ugly talks. I mean, we have some knockdown, dragouts, four-letter expletives because you're dealing with communities that have not had adequate policing in generations. Oftentimes, you're dealing with the low-income communities that the city has given up on. You're dealing with communities that people don't even know, haven't seen any type of a new sewer system, potholes still, in decades. So these people are going to be bitter. They're going to be distrustful of the city because that, for the most part, is what they saw. So you have to go in there and win them and be sincere. Now, the first step in doing that is environment. I can get rid of all the crime. We can get rid of all the crime you got. But if your neighborhood looks crappy, you got abandoned cars up in the front yard, rats running all over the place, you know, it's not going to change anything. So we talked about that on a couple of other shows. You get in there, that's your first step. Don't worry about the crime. Get in there, get those alleyways cleaned out. Hello, city. Bring those roll-offs up there. Get one geographic area. If you've got an area that's 3 square miles, it gets you four blocks, and you start on that 4 straight blocks. Empower those people. Get those 4 blocks. Get yards. Till up the lawns. Get them grass seed. Get those lawns planted. Sit down and meet with them every week. You're not going to get everybody, but you get somebody. These neighbors talk. Get them to meet each other. Get them on a watering cycle. Most of your places, your home and garden places, will donate the grass seed. That's a write-off for them. It's a tax write-off. Let people put in the sweat equity. Clean out your alleys. Clean out your garages. Save your metals. Trade that in. We've gone through that. We talked about that. Now, when you start getting all of that done, you know, you start taking pride in the neighborhood. Now, that's when we go next level. And we go and start dealing with, okay, now we're going to deal with the criminals. So when we go to deal with the criminals, we got to say, well, what are we going to deal with first? The first ones you got on your list. So you got 3 types of criminals. You got roaches, you got mice, and you got rats. Your roaches are just like those of us, and ain't no need nobody being shy. I ain't never had no roaches. Don't lie. Tell the truth, shame the devil. If you ever had a roach will come out and embarrass you. When company come over, that roach will step right on out the house, put you on blast. What the roaches are representing crime, and this is a formula I developed, so if somebody going to try to copy it, you heard it here first, and some of y'all have heard it before. The roaches are your people, like your graffiti artist, the prostitute that's walking down the street, the neighborhood drunk. These people don't pose a particular threat to you, but they're embarrassing when company comes. And you got Willie the Wino wandering down the street, you know, or Peggy the prostitute coming down the street, or the loud crack at it, whatever the case may be. These things aren't an immediate threat, but they're an eyesore. So when we work on the environment, you get your grass, you change your neighborhood, a lot of these things are going to go. Ironically, just like cleaning a house. Once you clean up after yourself and take the trash out, the roaches will leave. Then the next step you move on to are your mice. On a criminal scale, you know, it's just like if you have a mouse, you see the chewed up paper, you see the droppings, but you never see them. And these are people that come in and your car burglars, your thieves, people that break in your house, they break in your car. They you see the result of what they did. You don't see them, but you see the result sitting on them next. And then once you get them out of the way, you get to your toughest one, and that's your rats. You know, a rat will come into a house. He chews his way in, navigates through your house by the existing beings. These are your hardcore criminals. These are your gang members. These are your drug dealers. These people navigate through the legal system. They've been through it. So they use the legal system to support themselves navigating through. And they can reign terror. They're not afraid. They will fight when they are cornered. So what you do is you band together as we're working on the neighborhood as far as the environment. At the same time, we're dealing with these criminals. I help you with your problem. You go to my number two on my list, and we go back and forth. Once they see, especially the rats, they see that this is coming, this is going to go. People are bought in. That environment in those four blocks is changing. That drug dealer says, you know what, I'm going to go five blocks over where I don't have to put up with this and I can still make money. Because if I mess with them, they're going to put heat on me. So you get that established. Now, once you get that established, you got to make sure that you celebrate. You mark that date. You celebrate the day you get your crime down in those four blocks. You got your crime down. You know, you got nice yards. You got all this. You have to celebrate it, because if you don't recognize your achievement and celebrate it, you're going to slip back. But it's important to the city and the community police officer, neighborhood police officer, to let the people have the victory. It is not your victory. You're merely a tool. You're a hammer. The only reason you can nail things down because they swing in your heart. Let them have that victory, because the next neighborhood, the next four blocks over, is going to say, I want what they got. I want what they have. And then when they call me, Officer Mason, can you do over here what you did over there? No, Officer Mason didn't do that over there. Those people who live over there did that. Officer Mason just helped. So you direct the next neighborhood to the neighborhood you just finished, invite them into the neighborhood meeting, and that's how it goes. Everything is doing a better job in the community policing other than similar to East Waco. Colleen, you're a wonderful group concert. Yeah, Michael, I'll tell you, Colleen, and by the way, I'm sorry, you guys, if you want to call in at 646-716-4621 and then just press 1 and we'll get you on. Michael, that's a good point. You know, Waco has come a very long way. I mean, in the 90s, you know, I don't talk about my city much on here because, you know, I'm not going to open it up to where they get a chance to pick and choose what they like and don't like, and then they want to write me up for one thing over here and then pat me on the back for something they want to share on their Facebook. So I'm on my time, so I'm just going to be real. Waco in the 90s, you wouldn't have wanted to live here. This was a war zone. For those who live in Waco, you know. It was a war zone down here when the crack wars were going on. But community policing here, though, we didn't invest in it all the way. You know, there were only about 9 of us, and then plus a bike unit. And eventually the city got rid of it. But, you know, it was very effective here. It really made a difference here. And a lot of the things that Waco is enjoying today, from Magnolia being here, a lot of the new fire stations, the zoo, Baylor Stadium, a lot of the things that people are enjoying in Waco today is the result of community policing. Period, point blank. There's not a politician here can stand up and say, I did. You didn't do anything. The people in Waco cleaned up East Waco. The people in South Waco cleaned up South Waco. The people in North Waco around the projects, Parkside and the Villages, cleaned it up. The city didn't do it. The city did what the taxpayers pay them to do. But the people that came out and dug out sidewalks with me, painted churches, painted schools, painted houses, the Baylor students that chipped in to help, that is community policing. That's why I preach it, you guys. I've seen it firsthand. I've done it. I'm telling you it works. That's the thing that you want to have put in. Waco today is enjoying a low crime rate, and if somebody will come on, I don't like the way Waco PD did this. Well, guess what? No police department is perfect. But I'll tell you what, if you come back to 1993, 1994, you go down and live in Killeen. And for those of you that might be from Killeen listening, I'm not trashing you. I'm just saying, you know, community policing is your answer. I don't know if y'all are exploring it down there or not doing it. Okay? Now, as you continue to build in these neighborhoods, you have to develop realistic vision, not just for your block, but for the geographic neighborhood, however big boundary the city puts on it, and you get to name that neighborhood association. What is realistic? Some people want to see Nirvana, just a heaven, a perfect place on earth. That's not going to happen. We have to be realistic. And the first wave of people that come in and establish these neighborhoods and rebuild them, you're probably not going to live long enough to see. I'm lucky when I started here years ago, I'm alive to see some of the good things that have come. But there were a lot of good people that worked with me that were in their 50s and 60s back in the 90s. They're not alive today to see what their hard work did. That's part of the reason why I still do what I do and do it the way I do it, because I've watched people that were in their 65, 70 years old with health problems out there trying to help us dig up a sidewalk or serving tea to all the officers and citizens that were out there cutting grass and painting houses and painting churches, you know. So it pays off. It's very effective. You know, I got a caller that's calling in 203 area code, last 41513. What's up?
Hey, how you doing, Stan? This is Brother Charlie. I love what you're doing.
Hey, Charlie, how you doing, man?
Well, I'm a little under the weather. You're under the weather, my brother. But I love what you said about the community policing. It does work. I think a lot of people need to look into it in their respective communities if they're having problems with crime, drugs especially. But I also wanted to ask you, what benefits are some of these respective cities offering the police to get them to maybe move into these communities, especially I would say with rookie police officers that are just coming on, so they get a feel for the neighborhoods that they're going to be patrolling, so the citizens of the respective communities aren't afraid of the police. Maybe setting up the substation. Sometimes you see them, they're set up, 6 months later they're gone. So what do you think that they could offer the police departments and maybe even in the recruiting of officers from other departments to come in here and help these communities that are having problems?
Okay, Charlie, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. And you know me, I'm not going to give you the blue recruiting speech. I'm going to go on and keep it real. The first thing is, you know, I mean, it's from a police standpoint now here, when you want police officers to live in that city that they work in, that really sounds good. Until you got to figure now, if you're single, that's cool. But when you're married and you have kids and you're dealing with all these gangbangers and all the stuff that you got to deal with out here, and then your kids are going to that school in that town where you work with those people whose dad or mother you just locked up, that is a tremendous amount of pressure on your children. For everything from the name calling to the bullying because of what you do. So I'm up in the air on that one, but I will say this to your other question. I think that police departments need to do a hell of a lot better job of hiring folks than they're doing now. If you got 20 spots and you didn't get for 10 people, stop filling in the blank. You didn't get for 10 people. Stop hiring everybody's cousin and uncle and wife and husband. You know, we go through an interview process, ask relevant questions. If you've got somebody out there that has no cultural diversity experience and they're 25, 30 years old, you know, they don't have any desire. They want to do a job. They just want a safe job. They, or not safe, they want a secure job. where they're getting a paycheck. If that's what you're in it for, we're trained investigators. You can spot that. Go get these people badges and guns and put them on the street. You know, yes, you need to get caught up with your manning, but when you have officers who work in areas that they want to be in, see, police departments don't ask you where do you want to be. They assign you somewhere. So I think, this is just my opinion, you may have that low-income area, that violent area, that you've got officers who grew up in areas like that where it's considered the punishment area. You screw up, we're going to send you over here and put you on a night shift. I've been on nights almost my whole career and love it. But if you said, hey, is there anybody, if you got 15 slots, and you said, are there 15 officers that absolutely want to work this part of town? If you got 10, you're better off than what you got there now, that are going to get out the car, not be officer head and shoulders. And I'll tell you personally to me, and I've got a lot of friends that listen that live in nice neighborhoods and wealthy, and I live in a pretty nice neighborhood, but I'm more comfortable when I go to work, I'm more comfortable in the hood than I am in the hyphenated neighborhood. With the big gates and the big cameras and all that, I'm more comfortable in the hood because everybody knows me. That's where I go get my hair cut. That's where I go shop. That's where I go to the gym. You know, so everybody knows me there, so I'm comfortable. When I get out into the more affluent parts of town, and like I said, this is my opinion, you know, when you read about these people going off, I mean, they're going to kill everybody, the dog, the goldfish, and everybody else. So it's just for me, I'm more comfortable in the inner city part. The low-income part, I can relate more there. So I think if you ask officers, give them a chance to pick where they want to work, you're going to get some officers that don't want to be there, that's been stuck there, that can't wait to get out, and replace them with somebody who wants to be there. You know, that's the change, mm-hmm, I think needs to be made. And that's the people taking ownership of the department. The chief can make the decisions. Yeah, you're the chief. We all know that. You got the stars, and you drink Starbucks and do whatever you do and meet who you meet. But the ultimate boss are the citizens. But until the citizens learn their department, go in and meet them, there's some officers out there ain't worth a damn. That's honest to God's truth, but there's a lot of good ones. Now, how do you separate the two? You're going to have to, just like the officers got to get out the car and meet the people got to get off the porch and meet the officers. You're not going to like all of us that you meet. And we're not going to like all the citizens that we meet. But at least we meet. And that's where we have to start at. And if you need the chief to tell you to get out the car, you don't need a job.
And then I like all the citizens that we meet. But at least we meet.
Did I get all your questions?
Yeah, you pretty much got all my questions. I guess the only other one that I would sit with that, I totally agree with you. If a guy is single or a lady, can't be discriminated. And they might want to live. If they're given the opportunity maybe to have their rent reduced or maybe taxes, residential taxes reduced or anything like that, some kind of incentive. We know usually that civil servants usually get that. Included to their salaries.
They did that in the 90s. They had certain houses that were in your transitional neighborhoods, not necessarily your poor area or your rich area. They're transitional. They were neighborhoods that could go either way. And they actually did give the officers those houses at a reduced price. It had to be their primary residence. They had to live there. And after, I think it was 5 or 7 years, I'm not sure, you own the house. And then you could do what you mm-hmm. wanted to do with it. That was an effective program. That was under the Clinton bill or shortly thereafter. And, of course, that went away. See, that's the trick with community policing. Here's the hook, that the politicians who spit it out all the time and stand up and brag about it, and the police chiefs that stand up and brag about it, here's the hook on it. Yes, it's expensive because you have to have those officers available when the citizens want them. You know, when I did it, I may come in one day and I'm working a Saturday. I'm working from 8 to noon. Because I got to go to neighborhood meetings. But then the problems that the neighborhood was telling me to work on don't happen till after dark. So I have to come back at 10 and work till 4 that same day. I enjoyed it. It's not for everybody. But it is expensive. It's a lot of overtime. But I think the biggest thing that scares police chiefs, city managers, mayors, and city council people and sheriffs about community policing is this. When you work with that community that closely, You're not officer anybody, you stand. They just know, they see you just like a person in the community. So they value your opinion, everything from, you know, helping, giving them advice with their kids to maybe helping them with different things. And when you build that kind of trust, Mike says, Brook Oaks Neighborhood Association, that was my neighborhood. It was a combat zone, you're right. But when you build that kind of relationship with the community, they're afraid somebody may ask you, well, who are you going to vote for? Or who do you like in this election or that election? That scares politicians. And then for a lot of police chiefs, policing is, like I've always said, there are a lot of little kingdoms in police departments. See, these are things that they're not going to come out and tell you. It's not that they're hiding, they're just not going to tell you. But I'll tell you, everybody's got egos. And everybody's got kingdoms. Every section is a little kingdom. So if the chief goes to a city council meeting and the city, or one of the council members, wants to talk about a problem in their area, the chief can't be expected to know everything. I mean, let's be honest, he can't know everything about every area. And some chiefs, if they say, well, bring officer so-and-so in, that's the neighborhood officer, we want to hear from him. Some chiefs can't take that. I'm the chief, you hear from me. They just can't deal with that. So a lot of times that's why community policing goes away or doesn't get started, because it empowers the regular straight street officer. Just a street officer, not a sergeant, not a corporal, not a captain or a lieutenant. He or she can have more power than the chief as far as public influence. So that's the kickback to it. That's why I believe you don't see it instituted in so many places as these people proclaim to want to have it, as far as the police administrators and politicians. If that makes any sense to you. Okay, I guess I lost Charlie. I hope I made sense there in my response. But like I said, if you guys want to call in 646-716-4621, and I got some folks on Facebook that actually were in the neighborhoods that I worked in. One of them was the Brook Oaks neighborhood in the 90s. You know, Michael Frank's talking about it, and I'll tell you, we worked murders over there. People were dropping like flies over there, and community policing absolutely works. Google Waco 90s crime statistics and then Google it today, and you can see what a difference community policing can make. And I just want to recognize my ace in the bullpen is here, Tyrone K. Dunmore, the host of Inspiring News, and my co-host here on Behind the Blue Curtain. His mic's open, Ty. You can chime in here anytime you want, brother, because we're just rolling with it this morning. Okay. Moving to the next thing on the list. Now, I know I'm jumping around, but I'm going to go back to the community policing program. You know, we talked about setting realistic short-term goals. What can we get done in a reasonable amount of time that's cost-effective, that is inclusive, things that we can see a victory in? And we got a 30-day plan, we got a 60-day plan, a 90-day plan, and a 120. And that depends on the severity of the issue that you're going to tackle. You know, but they got to be realistic goals. You know, then once you get all the stuff written down, establish contact with the department. Invite the department in to the community. Don't go up there. Don't go. I would say when you go to meet somebody in their office, you're out of your element. You're in their arena. Bring them and show them what you've done. And then when they come in, you're going to get a lot more help from the chief. If you're going to bring the chief, bring the council person or representative, political representative for your district. Bring them. And make a list. Every church that's in your neighborhood, every single church. Who's the preacher of that church? It's not to hold them accountable so much as it is to include them. That church is an edifice. It's an icon in that neighborhood. And, you know, a lot of drug dealers used to tell me they could tell how active a neighborhood was in preventing crime by looking at the church. If the church had a rusty chain on it 5 days out of the week, they already knew that neighborhood was prime pickings. Because most of us know in the inner city, if you wanted to find a drug house in the 90s, all you had to do was find a church and go one block either way. And it was surrounded by drug houses. Where there were no churches, there were no drug houses. If the church is active in the neighborhood, if the people are outside of the church, they're doing things, they're visiting non-members, not just members, non-members, just sitting out, just fellowshipping. See, two objects cannot occupy the same space. If you're there, the drug dealer can't stand there. If we remember back in Chicago when the Nation of Islam went in there, When the police couldn't handle it, Nation of Islam stepped in there. All they did was stand in the same spot the gang members were standing at. And they got results. But you got to be willing to stand in the gap. You know, establish contact with the department. Okay, you have to acknowledge fault. This is the big one. This is the one that can choke off the whole program. You have to acknowledge fault on both sides. You can't go in, but the police, y'all don't do this, y'all don't do that, and I'm a taxpayer, and blah, 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 blah. Because let me tell you something, these officers can fire right back and say, you know what, I don't live here, but when I come out and ask who's breaking in cars, nobody knows nothing. When I come out and say who's breaking in houses, nobody knows nothing. You know, when I try to get out the car to meet people, everybody runs in the house. We can go back and forth like that, and that's why policing's in the situation it is today. The community and the police are at an impasse. Each side doesn't want to say it's my fault. I share some responsibility in this. Meet individually. There's some officers, like I said, you're going to like, and there's some you're not going to like. There's some I like, and there's some I don't like. And there's some that don't like me. And that's fine. But we work together, and we do what we have to do. There's citizens I don't like, but when they call me, they're not going to know that. I could put you in jail today and go out there and work your car tomorrow because that's what I get paid to do. Okay? You have to develop a twofold plan. Twofold. That plan has got to be geared for success and setback, not failure. Success and setback. And in that plan, like I said, you got your environment that you're going to deal with. You got your crime that you're going to deal with. You got the maintenance, keeping that neighborhood up, keeping that neighborhood strong, keeping in the meetings, you know, doing the proactive things that got your neighborhood clean. You got to keep that up. Then you got the most important one, the celebration, every year. On that anniversary, the neighborhood comes out, a block party. Invite the city. Invite other people in. Talk about your neighborhood. Brag on your neighborhood. Your property value is going up. People aren't shooting guns in the neighborhood no more. You don't have drug dealers everywhere. Your school might even step up a little bit and get a little bit better. So that's you know, I know I'm short on time this morning because, like I said, I got some appointments, but that's the plan for the neighborhood policing. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit real briefly with my host, my co-host, Tyrone K. Dunmore, about the START E&E tour and just exactly what brought this about, how it came about, what it's going to be, what it's going to do. Ty, you want to take the lead on that?
Yeah, okay, I'll take the lead. Basically, the START E&E tours stands for five gentlemen. And we're not excluding women. It just so happens to be, at this point, five gentlemen who decided to come together to, let's say, take this message, not just to Waco or Texas, but all throughout the country, because there's such a need for E&E. E&E would be education first, then entertainment. You know, entertainment is a big part of our culture and the society. Couldn't exclude the entertainment piece, but we wanted to do something different. We wanted to have an educational component on the same day, as opposed to, you know, a lot of times when you hear of what we call the after party. The after party is generally a party after there's a concert somewhere, and then there's an after party. But we wanted to do something different. So we put our heads together and we came up with this reception. I don't want to call it a conception because we want people to receive this, the importance of having both, because we know that as we were growing up, much of the music that we grew up on actually educated us as well, and we want to bring that back, what they want to say, old school or true school. Not that we're not doing anything with the younger generation, but we definitely needed to start somewhere. And you know, there's a lot of people who are looking for the antidote, or let's say looking for the some solutions to this ongoing problem. And one of those problems we know is we have to connect the dots insofar as we got to reconnect the chain of our families. In other words, the youth and the older people. We got to get the old school back with the new school. We got to sit down. We got to first educate. So we came up with this idea, and we said we can't just talk about it. We're going to have to actually do it, not just do these blog talk shows, which is fine, but go out and go throughout the country and connect with people we know all throughout the U.S. of A., and who knows, we may end up doing this worldwide because we have so many listeners in different parts of the world. You know, we're not limiting ourselves. So that is what the start tours is all about. Five gentlemen who came up, and each letter stands for the first letter of their actual name. So y'all kind of figure that one. I know you know what the S stands for. That's pretty simple. Stan, we know that. And I'm pretty sure you can figure out what the T stands for. That's Tyrone. So I'm going to stop right there. I'm going to give you all the answers. But so that's that is the basic plan. So we will educate, and then we will celebrate, and we'll connect the two. We'll combine the two all in one event, as opposed to just all partying. So that's it, man. That's my piece on it.
Well, you know what? And I'm going to tell you, I was excited with it because, you know, all of us have this certain things that we do. Tyrone, good speaker, knowledgeable, wise, but legendary DJ. Tony Tone, legendary DJ. So, I mean, all of it just fit together. And then what we do is, these people from the show that have been here, Dr. J, you know, Jackie Craig, Mark Hughes, people who have lived through conditions that a lot of people say, well, I studied this. I went to this class and Professor so-and-so taught me about it. No, when we go and when we do this program, the way the workshops are going to be set up is it's open dialogue. You can raise your hand and stand up at any time and ask a question. It's not going to be wait till the end. And then you may have some things that you can put in and teach us. So it's a give and take. This is not going to be where you go get lectured at, because none of us have all the answers. If we did, then we wouldn't be going through the problems that we're going through. It's about establishing a base where we all share knowledge, experience, and we take that back to whether you're in Dallas or you're coming from Houston or Fort Worth or New Orleans or Connecticut or wherever it is that you come to one of these shows. You get to overcome whatever stereotypes you had. You get to dialogue with people that are different than you on a personal basis. Then you go to the dance and you get to talk and discuss, and you don't have to worry about nobody pulling guns. We don't serve alcohol. I'm gonna tell everybody that up front in case anybody's bubble gets busted. There's no alcohol at this event. If you got to get turned up, then do it before you come. That's too much liability. I personally don't want that on my head. Tyrone doesn't want it on his head. I don't want anybody that came where alcohol served and they killed in an accident or killed somebody else. But so, you know, we want people to come out and have a good time. You know, dialogue, take the information that you get back to where you come from and set it up there so you can keep going, you know. We got Dr. Jay Hawes coming. This brother's knowledgeable. He was on the show 2 weeks ago. He's going to come. He's going to teach Nick Novello, 35-year veteran officer, Dallas Police Department. Nick's coming. And those of you that have heard Nick, a lot like me, he doesn't miss any words. And, you know, he calls things out. Nick is the one back in July we did a show. And Nick said in July that he predicted that the Dallas Police Department would be 1,000 officers short by October. We brought Nick back for the first show in October, and Dallas was officially 1,000 officers short. So Nick knows what he's talking about. Jackie Craig is going to come speak on her situation in Fort Worth, her interaction with Officer Martin up there, that it resulted in her being arrested and her two daughters being arrested and that whole thing getting out of control. But the thing is, it's not to blame the whole department. It's to focus on for departments to learn. This one officer of one incident not only catapulted your department into the negative spotlight of the entire country, if not, but it also drastically changed Ms. Craig's perception of police, not to mention her children. and people who view these negative videos. So that's the damage that one apathetic person can do. One person is having a bad day and just picks that day to go off the chain. It has a trickle-down effect. It hurts your city. It hurts your department. It hurts the officers that you got to work with. It hurts the officers who were at home when you did what you did. And so that being said, that goes back to what I always talk about officers. Speak up about things you don't like. Don't remain silent and let these people continue to operate in that same vein. Mark Hughes is going to come and speak. And Mark was the brother up in Dallas during after the Dallas officers were killed that turned over his AR-15. He was practicing his right to carry and bear arms. And he did a show here, and even though I had talked with him, when you listen to him explain what happened to him when they took him down to the police department, how it made him feel. You know, he's going to come and he's going to talk about his situation. You know, we've got a few other guest speakers that are going to pop in, so it's going to be very action-packed. You know, bring something to write with. You know, you want to take some notes, we're going to network. You're going to get to meet some, you know, between Tyrone and Tony Tone, you're going to meet some legends. You know, they're approachable. There's not going to be no big gated thing, wait in line. And, you know, both of them are people. You know, they're people persons. They love dealing with people. So it's going to be friendly. We're all on one accord. If you're in Waco area now and you want to get tickets to this event, you can get them at Sam's Store at 1426 Harry, the Jockey Club at 809 Elm Street. It's Elm Avenue, but, you know, down here we call it Elm Street. And you can see Mr. C over there, Reverend Stimson. Maryland's Gift Gallery in Sound World, 818 Elm. Miss Maryland, the queen, she's got tickets there. She can hook you up. You can go to the Look At Me Now Barbershop, 2401 West Waco Drive. They've got some tickets over there. They'll be able to hook you up. Heads Up Barbershop, 1623 Herring. You know, they've got them there. If you live outside of the area, Dallas, Houston, you know, I know a lot of people on here just said they wanted to come, and I know you guys live out of town. If you send me a Facebook message and or have my number, you send me a text message, say, hey, Stan, hold me a ticket. I'll put that ticket back for you. But by the 10th of February, let me know, yes, I am coming, or no, I'm not. Because if I hadn't heard from the 10th, I'm going to sell that ticket. Because there's somebody here that's going to be wanting to get in. You know, the only thing I could get when I was renting venues was the Lee Lockwood Library. Beautiful building. Beautiful. I was lucky to get that. But it's limited seating. So it can hold a max 200 people for the dance, about 180 for the workshop. So I printed up 180 tickets. So if you buy tickets, you're going to get into the workshop. I didn't print 200 tickets and have people all up on the wall and pinched in. And, you know, it's like I said in the video earlier, this is a ticketed event. You know, politicians, your politics not going to get you in. Preachers, your collar won't get you in. Policemen, your badge won't get you in. You know, you're going to have to buy a ticket if you want to come to this. And we're all in there sharing information. We're transferring ideas. Please, 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 don't bring children. I'm telling y'all now, I know somebody's going to do it. Don't bring children. I bought a ticket, but I couldn't find a babysitter. Some of the videos that we're going to look at, some of the issues we're going to talk about, and the way some people may choose to impart their experience, is not going to be conducive to children. And this is where adults can have adult conversations without having to be dad or nana or pop-pop or whatever. You know, we're going to get in there and crack down and have some good discussion and have a good time. So please, no children, and we're going to go probably each session about 45 minutes, 15-minute break. Next session will start 45 minutes, 15-minute break. So you're not going to sit and listen to somebody for an hour, and then, you know, the next hour comes. There's going to be breaks in between, you know, and we're going to transfer some ideas at the end. I'll ask you guys, I have a critique sheet, and I'll ask you to take a minute and just fill it out and let us know things we could do different, how we could do it better. If you want to make comment about this show, you can say, hey, you know, do this better or stop doing this or do that, you know, because ultimately we want to make this work and make it good. But we want to make it what people want, not my vision or Tyrone's vision, but with the people's vision, where they feel comfortable. That's what we're going to do. And then, you know, I look forward to seeing as many people as I can from the Waco area, Central Texas area. You know, you get to see two mega DJs, you know, for $25 for a seminar and that. And it's already going to be cold down here on February 17th in Texas. Yes, it does get cold in Texas. It ain't going to be that Connecticut cold, but it's going to be cold. So And you need to take your lady somewhere nice for Valentine's Day anyway. So you might as well bring her out and hear Terrible T and Tony Tone and, you know, come in and get a little bit of knowledge in the meantime. But we're getting down to probably about the last 5 minutes. So I've got a few people left online. Charlie, your mic is still open. Do you have anything to add?
The only thing I got to add is get the tickets quick, because this brother, what he's advertised out, is going to be strong. And I hope to see you put it on the road too, brother.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We got some cities that have already, you know, expressed some interest in it. Can you guys come? And like I said, it's very proactive. You know, it's going to be nonsensical. I mean, when we come in, we're going to get to the point. We're going to do, you know, shows. If we're going to do a mainline show like this, we're going to go visit some of these high crime areas. We don't need a police escort. You just give us a driver and show us, let them take us, and we want to meet the people who are going to be living through the very conditions we're going to talk about, that maybe can't afford to come to these shows. People shouldn't be priced out of progress, because these are the people that are putting the down payment down with their hardship and their lives for a lot of the things that a lot of us enjoy. So you got to always give back in everything that you do. And this show will always speak for the least. Sometimes folks' feelings get hurt because I present things a certain way, or because my mind is always on the least. I don't, you know, I got what I got, but I know there's people out there that don't have, never will have the little bit that I got. So I try to keep it focused that way. So, you know, I appreciate everybody that tuned in today. Of course, my ace in the bullpen, Tyrone, Kay Dunmore. Ty, you got any parting words of wisdom here?
I would just like to say that, you know, one of the things that we were told or people have expressed was, you know, how many conversations, how long it's going to take. I mean, this is an ongoing process. This is not going to end in our lifetime. I mean, this is something that went into place hundreds of years ago. As you know, we're just getting ready to embark on the 50th. Year after the assassination of the late, great Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So it's only been two generations, though there was 16 generations prior to that that were adversely affected by a lot of the nonsense that we see today. This is the unfortunate trickle-down effects of it. So there's a five-point program or five-point process that we'll talk about that day, which I'll bring, you heard it before, but it's basically the five P's that we got to continue to stay involved in. Otherwise, we won't get rid of things. In other words, we won't resolve things. If we don't get involved, and things will continue to dissolve or to be destroyed or destruct. You know, we need definitely, as you say, with this community policing, we need... I also say this is a social community renaissance at this point now in history. We need a social community revival, and we need a social community resurrection. When I mean a common unity, what's common good for all people. So, I mean, I know most people, when you hear about the renaissance, you think of something else. You think about revival, you think of church, or resurrection, you think of Jesus. But it goes much deeper and much more vast than just on one person. We're living in a world that we need a resurrection. Our world needs to be revived. Our world needs a renaissance. We need to rebuild it, because it is definitely going down, because there's a certain mindset out there that it has created such perception. So many people have received, and it's a conception but that creates what we know as a reality. And that reality, unfortunately, doesn't work well for a big segment of this population. So we got to definitely take a more of an approach of an emotional investment in our lives, insofar as our communities and our lives. I mean, if we don't, the society, the community will become soulless. It will become emotionalist, and we'll continue to have these just mechanical, robotic exchanges and experiences. And one of the things is we're doing it in good practice is these cell phones, you know, texts and tweets. And, you know, the communication between human beings is going out the door. a lot of communication now is just, you know, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat, or all these machines are taking over, and we're losing out on the human process of what should be growth. Though technology has increased, so this is going to be a non-stop, ongoing process. You know, these conversations will never stop. If it stops, then what happens is we'll end up just waiting for the next fire or something, explosion, and then people want to meet. People want to protest. No, we got to. This has to be an ongoing thing. It has to be proactive. We got to get out of the mindset of constantly being reactive. We really got to get to know one another. Not just know who the criminals are, or who's suspicious, or who's suspect. But get to know people, and that goes on both hands. Like I said, with the community policing, with the society, with the neighborhood itself. Let the people know who's who, you know, not just who's doing dirt, but who's Mr. Clean too, because it's sad that people will only know who the troublemakers are, who the gangbangers are, who the dope deals are, right? Communities is not filled with those type of, let's say, cancers. We know it affects it, but come on. There's hardworking people in all those areas. So, you know, let's really get to know one another again and get out the house and get out in the streets and get into the neighborhood, get your faces out of the phones and call people up, talk to people again, not text.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to leave that as a note before we leave.
All right. Always appreciate you, brother. Like I said, I thank you guys for tuning in, not just today, but I mean, a lot of y'all every Saturday, you know, y'all are here, and I know it's later on the East Coast and earlier on the West Coast, but, you know, you guys pop in. You pop in and out, but you take time out of your day to come in here and send chats, send support. And I'm going to tell you, it means a lot. It really does. And I don't just say that to say it. It really does mean a lot, because this takes a lot of work and it's time consuming. And, you know, I know, like I said before, it takes me a while sometimes to respond back to you guys. But I'm gonna get back to you. I'm going to, you know, like your post or comment on it or acknowledge that you took the time out to write something or acknowledge something that I said. You know, just you got to be a little patient with me. I work nights, so I get off at 7 in the morning. So a lot of times, by the time I get out the gym and come home, I'm knocked out to like 4 or 5 in the evening, and then I wake up and I'm behind the 8-ball getting ready for work. But I'm not going to take you guys for granted. I'll try to get back to you as quick as I can. Like I said, if you got an idea for the show, you got something that you want to talk about, you got something that's important to you, all you got to do, reach out to me on Facebook. You know, just shoot me a message. Hey, Stan, I want to talk about this, or I want to talk about that, or, you know, I think this is important. And if you believe that much in it, you do the research, you got 30, we'll give you 30 minutes. You got 30 minutes. It'll be your show. You know, I'll play the little music and pop you up there, and you can run with it. You know, you don't have to worry about whether you sound like Dick Clark or whether you sound like you're doing Soul Train or whatever the case may be. We're just talking. You know, we're having dialogue, and that's what it's about. It's not about putting on airs and putting on performances. If you want that, you can turn on SiriusXM, and you'll get all that stuff. But up here, you can stay on as long as you want to be on. So, once again, I appreciate all you guys for tuning in to Facebook Live crew that stayed and checked out everything. You guys, be careful out there tonight. It's Saturday. I know some of y'all are going to go out. You know, take an Uber. If you're in the Waco area, there's no more yellow cab. Uber took over, so... You know, you're going to have to take an Uber from now on, but don't drink and drive, you know. And you guys take care of each other. Love you guys. Appreciate you.
Ladies and gentlemen, please sit back, because you are now about to go behind the blue curtain. Get down.